Blog Talk Radio.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
Okay, what happened last week? I want to say hello to everybody, but sorry about missing my show last week. I had tried to reschedule it for Sunday since Sunday has been kind of barren because Bing has not been doing his show lately because he's had problems and it's been real busy. But I decided to reschedule my show for Sunday, and I went into the studio and rescheduled it, but I didn't check it. So when Sunday came around, I found that it never changed, and I missed my show. So sorry about that. Welcome to the show. In the Albuquerque Journal today, it had a huge headline that said, Making History, with the photo put in there of Ketanji Brown Jackson and Biden, as she is now the first black woman Supreme Court justice ever. But where the history actually was made here was not because she was black or woman. History was made because the Democrats decided that she had to be the one over a big number of others who were actually more qualified for the position than her and more lawful in their rulings than she was. History was made because the wrong person was put in the position. And the only reason that she was elevated to that lifetime position was not because of her greatness as a judge, which is where the emphasis should have been put. The reason she was put there is because she is a black woman. Believe me, folks, for the position that was supposed to be for upholding the law at the highest level, being black and being a woman, is not the reason you want to espouse. What you want to espouse when it comes to this is historic, because she is the best person above all for this position. That's what should have been looked at, but that is not what the Democrats are after. The only reason she was put into that position is not because she is a good judge or not because she did great things during time she's been a judge. The only reason she was put in that position is because she was black and she was a woman, period. Her judicial rulings over the years are troubling, to say the least. With her rulings on child porn people, her rulings are dismal, if not horrible, giving 100% of them much less than the recommended sentence, with one getting only 3 months when the recommendations for him was 91 to 121 months. Folks, this confirmation to the Supreme Court for this horrible woman is not historic. It is a bad thing for our children and a good thing for pornographers. And we will have to live with this stupid decision by our Senate for about 30-plus years now. Way to go, senators. You just screwed us back into a Supreme Court that had gotten rid of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and given us back another justice who is liberal and won't follow the laws, but will follow the rule of the iron fist of the liberal injustice, for which for the worst of us is no justice at all. Welcome to today's show, and today we'll be talking about her and of CRT, the reasons it has happened and the reasons we should fight it every time it is found out to be taught to our children. It is indoctrination to get more people like Ketanji Brown Jackson into our government in the future. People who will not follow the law, but will make up new ones to push their ideals, not the ones of the founding fathers. Welcome to today's show.
But what we saw in that Senate today was a cowardly group of Republicans who apparently have no option to do.
Show me where it said that protest is supposed to be polite and peaceful.
Do something about your dad's immigration practices, you feckless.
They go low, he can.
How do you resist the temptation to run up and wring her neck?
The biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized right on to the right.
I thought he should have punched him in the face. So even if you lost, he insulted your wife.
Yes.
He came down the escalator and thought Mexicans raped us and murdered. He said, well, what do you think I should have done? I said, I think you should have punched him in the face and then gotten out of the race. He would have been a hero.
I'd like to punch him in the face. If I said we're in high school, I'd take him behind the gym and beat the hell out of him.
Punch some people in the face!
When was the last time an actor assassinated a president?
It's amazing how people try to frame everything racially and how they create divisions among our society.
That's one small step for man. One giant leap for mankind.
Welcome to hour number one of NWCR Radio with your host, Robert Garding. This is Duke Brooks of Radio Free Delmarva from 92.7 WGMD, Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. And I'm proud to introduce my friend Robert as we fight to protect the America we know and love. Through the silver microphone of freedom with the voice of reason in this unreasonable world, you're listening to NWCR Radio, broadcast through the CNM network in Albuquerque, New Mexico, from our Freedom Studio. And now, here's Robert.
Show with my monologue of the new so-called justice of our un-Supreme Court. When it comes to the Supreme Court, we have two sides pushing for what they want. Only one side will claim their pick is historic. But that isn't the side that will actually pick people who are indeed historic. Historic in their rulings and historic in the way that of following the Constitution and the laws of this nation. Several over the years have been indeed historic, though they were never picked because they were a minority or a woman. In that, the other side, the leftists, voted against them. And the leftist votes against these well-qualified people were for one reason only, based on their race or their sex. But now the left says they are historic because they got their first black woman to be a Supreme Court justice. But to them, and you have to listen to this while taking into account their objectives to the others I just mentioned, the only reason Ketanji Brown Jackson was nominated in the first place was so they could get the first black woman on the Supreme Court, period. Her record when it comes to rulings didn't matter. Her rulings were horrible, to say the least, putting the victim into the chair of the one that was wrong and putting the perpetrator into the chair of the one that was wronged. That was wronged. As she became a Supreme Court justice now, this is a sad day for law in America. The other thing that I will be discussing today on the show, CRT, will suddenly probably raise its ugly head more now because we have a Supreme Court justice in her that will probably not rule against this when in fact she should every time. So seeing what is coming in our judicial now, this show will be about CRT and the reason it exists and the reasons why we must fight against it every time it is being taught to our children. And mark my words, folks, as long as the liberal establishment has anything to say about it,
CRT will be taught so our children will be indoctrinated to be another Ketanji Brown Jackson for the future. From the article I found on CRT, and I'm going to sneeze, I'm sorry. Goodness. From the article I found on CRT, this is sobering. And we need to sit back and listen, for the future, our future, is at stake. The article is titled Critical Race Theory, What It Is and How to Fight It. It was written by Christopher F. Rufo, founder and director of Battlefront. Critical race theory is fast becoming America's new institutional orthodoxy. Yet Americans have never heard of it. And those who have, many don't understand it. It's time for this to change. We need to know what it is so we know how to fight it. In explaining, and hello, Sarge, good to see you there. In explaining critical race theory, it helps to begin with a brief history of Marxism. Originally, the Marxist left built its political program on the theory of class conflict. Marx believed that the primary characteristic of industrial societies was the imbalance of power between capitalists and workers. The solution to that imbalance, according to Marx, was revolution. The workers would eventually gain consciousness of their plight, seize the means of production, overthrow the capitalist class, and usher in the new socialist society. During the 20th century, a number of regimes underwent Marxist-style revolutions, and each ended in disaster. Socialist governments in the Soviet Union, China, Cambodia, Cuba, and elsewhere racked up a body count of nearly 100 million of their own people. They are remembered for their gulags, show trials, executions, and mass starvations. In practice, Marx's ideas unleashed man's darkest brutalities. By the mid-1960s, Marxist intellectuals in the West had begun to acknowledge these failures, and they recoiled at the revelations of Soviet atrocities that came to realize that the workers' revolution would never occur in Western Europe or in the United States, where there were large middle classes and rapidly improving standards of living. Americans in particular had never developed a sense of class consciousness or class division. Most Americans believed in the American dream, the idea that they could transcend their origins through education, hard work, and good citizenship. But rather than abandon their leftist political project, the Marxist scholars in the West simply adapted their revolutionary theory to the social and racial unrest of the 1960s. Abandoning Marx's economic dialect of capitalists and workers, they substituted race for class and sought to create a revolutionary coalition of the dispossessed based on racial and ethnic categories. Fortunately, the early proponents of this revolutionary coalition in the U.S. lost out in the 60s to the civil rights movement, which sought instead the fulfillment of the American promise of freedom and equality under the law. Americans preferred the idea of improving their country to overthrowing it. The vision of Martin Luther King Jr., President Johnson's pursuit of the Great Society, and the restoration of law and order promised by President Nixon in his 1968 campaign defined the post-1960s American political consensus. But the radical left had proved resilient and enduring, which is where the critical race theory comes in. And now, to discuss what it is, I'm trying to say, okay. Yeah, it's good to see you there, Sarge. What it is, critical race theory is an academic discipline formulated in the 1990s built on the intellectual framework of identity-based Marxism, regulated for many years to universities and obscure academic journals. Over the past decade, it has increasingly become the default ideology in our public institutions. It has been injected into government agencies, public school systems, teacher training programs, and corporate human resources departments in the form of diversity training programs. Now, these all should sound familiar now. Human resources modules, public policy frameworks, and school curricula. There are a series of euphemisms deployed by its supporters to describe critical race theory, including equity, social justice, diversity and inclusion, and culturally responsive teaching. Critical race theorist masters of language construction realized that neo-Marxism would be a hard sell. Equity, on the other hand, sounds non-threatening and is easily confused with Americans' principle of equality. But the distinction is vast and important. Indeed, equality, Americans' principle of equality, but the distinction is vast and important. Indeed, equality, the principle proclaimed by the Declaration of Independence, defended in the Civil War and codified into law with the 14th and 15th Amendments, the Civil Rights Act of 64 and the Voting Rights Act of 65, is explicitly rejected by critical race theorists. To them, equality represents mere non-discrimination and provides camouflage for white supremacy, patriarchy, and oppression. In contrast to equality, equity is defined as and promoted by critical race theorists as little more than reformulated Marxism. In the name of equity, UCLA law professor and critical race theorist Cheryl Harris has proposed suspending private property rights, seizing land and wealth, and redistributing them along racial lines. These are all things that nobody ever hears because the media won't talk about it. But this person did. Critical race guru Ibram X. Kendi, who directs the Center for Anti-Racist Research at Boston University, has proposed the creation of a federal department of anti-racism. Of course, this department would be independent of and unaccountable to the elected branches of government and would have the power to nullify, veto, or abolish any law at any level of government and curtail the speech of political leaders and others who are deemed insufficiently anti-racist. One practical result of the creation of such a department would be the overthrow of capitalism since according to Kendi, quote, in order to truly be anti-racist, you have to be truly anti-capitalist, unquote. In other words, identity is the means and Marxism is the end. The equality-based form of government would mean the end not only of private property, but also of individual rights, equality under the law, federalism, and freedom of speech. See, they're trying to get rid of all of our freedoms and all of our God-given rights. And they're succeeding in a wildly horrible way. These would be replaced by race-based redistribution of wealth, group-based rights, active discrimination, and omnipotent bureaucratic authority. Historically, the accusation of anti-Americanism has been overused, but in this case, it's not a matter of interpretation. Critical race theory prescribes a revolutionary program that would overturn the principles of the Declaration and destroy the remaining structure of the Constitution. Now, here's how it works. What does critical race theory look like in practice? Last year, I authored a series of reports focused on critical race theory in the federal government. The FBI was holding workshops on intersectionality theory. The Department of Homeland Security was telling white employees they were committing micro inequities. and had been socialized into oppressor roles. The Treasury Department held a training session telling staff members that virtually all white people contribute to racism and that they must convert everyone in the federal government to the ideology of an anti-racism. And the Sandia National Laboratories here in Albuquerque, which designs America's nuclear arsenal, sent white male executives to a three-day re-education camp where they were told white male culture was analogous, A-N-A-L-O-G-O-U-S, to the KKK, white supremacists, and mass killings. So if you're white and you're working for the Sandia National Laboratories and you're being told that you're the same as the KKK, you've caused mass killings, you're white male privilege, and all this other stuff, which most people I would think would be pissed off about. But the executives were forced to renounce their white male privilege and write letters of apology to fictitious women and people of color. Now, how insane is this, folks? But it's happening. This year, I produced another series of reports focused on critical race theory in education. In Cupertino, California, an elementary school forced first graders to deconstruct their racial and sexual identities and rank themselves according to their power and privilege. In Springfield, Missouri, a middle school forced teachers to locate themselves on an oppression matrix based on the idea that straight, white, English-speaking Caucasian males are members of the oppressor class and must atone for their privilege and convert white supremacy. In Philadelphia, an elementary school forced fifth graders to celebrate black communism and simulate a black power rally to free 1960s radical Angela Davis from prison, where she had once been held on charges of murder. And in Seattle, the school district told white teachers that they are guilty of spirit murder against black children and must bankrupt their privilege in acknowledgement of their thrived inheritance. Now, the man who wrote this, his name, let me see, I'll get back here where it begins. This whole thing is insane, folks. It is completely insane, but it's happening here in America. Okay. Let's see where I was. I'm just one investigative reporter, journalist, he said, but I've developed a database of more than 1,000 of these stories. When I say that critical race theory is becoming the operating ideology of our public institutions, it is not an exaggeration. From the universities to the bureaucracies to kindergarten through 12 school systems, critical race theory has permeated the collective intelligence and decision-making process of American government with no sign of slowing down, except for when they have parents who will come and talk about it, then they'll say, oh, no, we're not doing that. But it's been proven. People have seen it. It is documented. But they still deny it. It's just like in government. Everything that Hunter Biden has done and is now getting in trouble for, which he probably won't, but is now getting in trouble for, he's saying, I didn't do any of that. But it's recorded. It's documented. But this is a revolutionary change. When originally established, these government institutions were presented as neutral, technocratic, and oriented towards broadly held perceptions of the public good. Today, under the increasing sway of critical race theory and related ideologies, they are being turned against the American people. This isn't limited to the permanent bureaucracy in Washington, D.C., but is true as well as the institutions of the state, even in red states. It is spreading to country public health departments, small Midwestern school districts, and more. This ideology will not stop until it has devoured all of our institutions. Next section of it talks about feudal resistance. Thus far, attempts to halt the encroachment of critical race theory have been ineffective. There are a number of reasons for this. First, too many Americans have developed an acute fear of speaking up about social and political issues, especially those involving race. According to a recent Gallup poll, 77% of conservatives are afraid to share their political beliefs publicly, worried about getting mobbed on social media, fired from their jobs, or worse. They remain quiet, largely ceded to the public debate to those pushing these anti-American ideologies. Consequently, the institutions themselves become monocultures, dogmatic, suspicious, and hostile to a diversity of opinion. Conservatives in both the federal government and the public school systems have told me that their equity and inclusion departments serve as political offices searching for and stamping out any dissent from the official orthodoxy. Second, critical race theorists have constructed their argument like a mousetrap. Disagreement with their program becomes irrefutable because evidence of a dissenter's white fragility, unconscious bias, or internalized white supremacy. I've seen this projection of false consciousness on their opponents play out dozens of times in my reporting. Diversity trainers will make an outrageous claim such as all whites are intrinsically oppressors, or white teachers are guilty of spirit murdering black children, and then when confronted with disagreement, they adopt a patronizing tone and explain their participants who feel defensiveness or anger are reacting out of guilt and shame. So when we confront them, we're only being defensive because we are acting out of anger because of our guilt and shame. That stops a lot of people. Dissenters are instructed to remain silent, lean into the discomfort, and accept their complicity and white supremacy. Third, Americans across this political spectrum have failed to separate the premise of critical race theory from its conclusion, its premise that American history includes slavery and other injustices, which I have talked about before. Slavery, when America was put together, was prevalent all over the world. We had less of it than anybody else did. But their premise is that American history includes slavery and other injustices, and that we should examine and learn from that history is undeniable. But its revolutionary conclusion that America was founded on and defined by racism, and that our founding principles, our Constitution, and our way of life should be overthrown, does not rightly, much less necessarily, follow. Fourth, and finally, the writers and activists who have had the courage to speak out against critical race theory have tended to address it on the theoretical level, pointing out the theory's logical contradictions and dishonest account of history. These criticisms are worthy and good, but they move the debate into the academic realm, which is friendly terrain for proponents of critical race theory. They fail to force defenders of this revolutionary ideology to defend the practical consequences of their ideas in the realm of politics. And that's where we get into the political engagement. No longer simply an academic matter, critical race theory has become a tool of political power. To borrow a phrase from the Marxist theoretician Antonio Gramsci, G-R-A-M-S-C-I, It is fast achieving cultural hegemony in America's public institutions. More and more, it is driving the vast machinery of state and society. If we want to succeed in opposing it, we must address it politically at every level. That can't be done, but that's how it's being pushed now. Critical race theorists must be confronted with and forced to speak to the facts. Do they support public schools separating first graders into groups of oppressors and oppressed? Do they support mandatory curricula teaching that, quote, all white people play a part in perpetuating systemic racism, unquote? Do they support the public schools instructing white parents to become white traitors and advance and an advocate for white abolition? Do they want those who work in government to be required to undergo this kind of re-education? How about managers and workers in corporate America? How about the men and women in our military? How about every one of us? There are three parts to a successful strategy to defeat the forces of critical race theory: governmental action, grassroots mobilization, and an appeal to principle. We already see examples of governmental action. Last year, one of my reports led President Trump to issue an executive order banning critical race theory-based training programs in the federal government. President Biden rescinded this order on his first day in office, but it provides a model for governors and municipal leaders to follow, which Florida has, Texas is doing, several other states are doing. This year, several state legislatures have introduced bills to achieve the same goal, preventing public instructions from conducting programs that stereotype, scapegoat, or demean people on the basis of race. And I've organized a coalition of attorneys to file lawsuits against schools and government agencies that impose critical race theory-based programs on grounds of the First Amendment, which protects citizens from compelled speech, the 14th Amendment, which provides equal protection under the law, and Civil Rights Act of 1964, which prohibits public institutions from discriminating on the basis of race. With critical race theory, all that's being done. Citizens are not being protected from compelled speech. Citizens are not being provided equal protection under the law. And they're not providing public, they're not being prohibited in public institutions from discriminating on the basis of race. They do it. On the grassroots level, the multiracial and bipartisan coalition is emerging to do battle against the critical race theory. Parents are mobilizing against racially divisive curricula in public schools, and employees are increasingly speaking out against Orwellian re-education in the workplace. When they see what is happening, Americans are naturally outraged that critical race theory promotes the three ideas: race essentialism, collective guilt, and neo-segregation, which violate the basic principles of equality and justice. Anecdotally, many Chinese Americans have told me that having survived the Cultural Revolution in their former country, they refuse to let the same thing happen here. In terms of principles, we need to employ our own moral language rather than allow ourselves to be confined by the categories of critical race theory. For example, we find ourselves debating diversity. Diversity, as most of us understand, is a generally good, all things being equal, but it is of secondary value. We should be talking about and aiming at excellence, a common standard that challenges people of all backgrounds to achieve their potential. That's not being done. On the scale of desirable ends, excellence beats diversity every time. Similarly, in addition to pointing out the dishonesty of the historical narrative on which critical race theory is predicated, we must promote the true story of America. And that's over the last 40, 50 years has been slowly disseminated and taken out. A story that is honest about the injustices in American history, but that places them in the context of our nation's high ideals and progress that we have made towards realizing them. A genuine American history is rich with stories of achievements and sacrifices that will move the hearts of Americans, in stark contrast to the grim and pessimistic narrative pressed by critical race theorists. Above all, we must have courage, the fundamental virtue required in our time, courage to stand and speak the truth, courage to withstand epithets, which they're going to throw at us, courage to stand and speak the truth, courage to face the mob, courage to shrug off the scorn of the elites. When enough of us overcome the fear that currently prevents so many from speaking out, the hold of critical race theory will begin to slip. And the courage begets courage. It's easy to stop a lone dissenter. It's much harder to stop 10, 20, 100, 1,000, 1 million or more who stand up together for the principles of America. Truth and justice are on our side. If we can muster the courage, we will win. Reeling in the Years reminds us that we will be right back after these important messages with more of the Voice of Reason on NWCR Radio.
Nurse, set up an IV. And you, her boyfriend. You were the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie. I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Conservative Nation Media, or CNM, is pleased to announce the return of Black by Color Only with Vincent Brown. Earlier this summer, Vincent took time off for the summer to do some things that he wanted to do with his family. Family is important, no matter what the left says. Now he is back. Starting on the 19th of September, Vincent Brown is back with Black by Color Only at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Saturdays with the show that you all loved. Vincent has a special way to let you know just what is going on and why it is good or bad. That's Black by Color Only on CNM, where America always wins. Okay, we're back, and the call-in number is 646-478-5284. As more and more evidence of war crimes in Ukraine emerge, there are serious considerations being given to some drastic measures to punish Russia with. The Kremlin has largely been able to hedge the sanctions they've been straddled with thus far, but the recent discovery of a grisly massacre in the Kiev suburb of Bucha has made supporting Russia in any way, shape, or form diplomatically unattainable. The United Nations has now made it clear that Russia is in the proverbial doghouse with them as well, stripping the wannabe superpower of a major appointment within the organization. The United Nations General Assembly voted Thursday to suspend Russia from the Human Rights Council following global outrage stemming from allegations atrocities recently committed by Russian troops in Bucha, Ukraine. A total of 93 members of the assembly voted in favor of the measure, while 24 were against and 58 abstained. those who voted against the resolution included Russia's regional ally, Belarus, China, North Korea, Iran, and Syria. Of course, Russia's actions are beyond the pale. Ukrainians, UN ambassadors Sergei Kylystra, I guess, K-Y-S-L-Y-S-T-Y-A, said prior to the vote, Russia is not only committing human rights violations, it is shaking the underpinnings of national peace and security. Russia defended itself, of course, by insisting again that the Bucha massacre was a hoax perpetrated by Ukraine and in the interest of behooving the United States, all of which has been proven untrue time and time again throughout the conflict. Now, all of this stuff that's been going on over there, we keep hearing two sides of it. Russia's always saying, oh, no, we didn't do that. When photographs show that they did, and they keep saying that they're never going to stop, but the world pretty much knows right now that Ukraine is an unwinnable war for them. They're getting their socks beaten off, showing the world that the Russian army is not as great as Vladimir Putin says it is. They are losing tanks by the hundreds. They are losing airplanes. They are losing troops. They have troops that are shooting themselves in the foot so they can't serve. To me, this all tells me that Russia is not in a winning position. Yet Vladimir Putin keeps saying that everything that is being told the world is a hoax. I don't know. This whole idea, this whole thing about Russia and what is going on over there. I usually watch Newsmax. They had a guy for a while that was over there as a reporter who was constantly helping people, helping Ukrainians who had been shot or who had been trying to get out while the Russians destroyed the way that they had to get out. I haven't seen him in a few weeks. I've never heard anything as to whether he was killed or just taken a vacation. And I would think that, you know, if he's still around, he's taken a vacation, because that would be rough to have to put up with stuff like that. But I don't know. The two things that I have to talk about tonight are Ukraine and the Supreme Court Justice's confirmation of President Joe Biden. President Joe Biden on Friday, which was today, unleashed criticism against Senate Republicans for asking tough questions about his Supreme Court Justice's judicial record during her confirmation hearings. The president said he knew that his Supreme Court nominee would be put through a painful and difficult confirmation process, but what he saw from Republican senators was worse than he had expected, according to him. What Judge Jackson was put through was well beyond that, Biden said angrily. It was verbal abuse, the anger, the constant interruptions, the most vile, baseless assertions and accusations. Now, Biden was referring to Republican questions such as those from Senators Josh Hawley, Republican of Missouri, and Ted Cruz, Republican of Texas, of Jackson's judicial record. Now, if this is about her judicial record, this is all on file. This is all documented. How can it be baseless? Biden is wrong here. But they included her choice to reduce sentences for convicts guilty of child pornography. Jackson also stumbled over a question she should not have stumbled over, but she did anyway, and this should have sent up red flags everywhere. When Senator Marsha Blackburn, Republican of Tennessee, asked if she could define a woman, Jackson replied, "Not in this context. I'm not a biologist." Well, I have so many things that I can show you on this one. The memes went insane over this one, where people started coming up with these memes after she said that she couldn't tell what a woman was because she's not a biologist. It was just crazy, the things that have come out. And I'm trying to find that now as I'm trying to get to my page. Okay. Let's see here. Well, I'll tell you, this computer can be slow when it wants to be. There it is. Gotcha. There. Now, here are some of the memes that have come out over the last couple of weeks from what she has said. Now, if I can get my computer to start showing me what I've got here. But this is crazy. Have one showing a teacher standing in front of a blackboard, says, "What is 2 + 2? Ketanji Black Jackson says, "I wouldn't know. I'm not a mathematician." Another one, "How many eggs are in a dozen?" Ketanji Jackson says, "I don't know. I'm not a chicken." Another one says, in an operating room, shows a doctor and a woman who just had a baby, and the doctor's holding the baby, and she says, "Is it a boy or a girl?" And he says, "I have no idea. I'm not a biologist." Another one says, "I'm stuck at a gas station off the interstate, and I don't know which bathroom to use. Quick, someone call a biologist." Then they had the whole thing about how with Kavanaugh, how the Democrats were saying, "Believe all women." Then with the woman judge, Coney Barrett, I can't remember her name, but then they were saying, "Believe some women." And with Ketanji Brown saying, "What's a woman?" This is great. There's another one says, "How many feet are in a yard?" A teacher's asking, "How many feet are in a yard?" And Ketanji Jackson says, "I don't know. I'm not a podiatrist. It's this whole idea. Another one shows a woman standing in the rain, and she is soaked, and she's saying, "Is it raining?" And the guy says, "I don't know. I'm not a meteorologist." And then another one showed a dog. He's sitting on the couch. He says, "I'm not a biologist, but this is a dog." Another one shows from Forrest Gump. He's standing there talking to a lady. He says, "I'm not a smart man, but I know what a woman is." This whole thing, this is, another one says, "Can you tell us what planet we're on?" She says, "No, I can't. I'm not an astrophysicist." The whole idea that what is going on here in this nation, we have a Supreme Court justice now who is going to be a Supreme Court justice for 30-plus years now. She can't even tell us what a woman is. She cannot give child pornographers the sentences that they should have. She reduced 100% of them. These are things that should have thrown a red flag into the whole mess. It should have said, no, this woman is not qualified in any way, shape, or form to be on the nation's highest court. Yet the Democrats, like I said at the beginning of this show, were only after one thing. They didn't care if she was qualified for the job. They didn't care if she would be good at the job. All they wanted was a black woman. To me, and I said this when Barack Obama became president and was doing such a horrible job, if I was a black person and I became the first black person to be president or the first black person to be a Supreme Court justice, I would want to be the best that I could possibly be. It seems like what we have here is a failure to communicate, because it doesn't matter if you're going to be good at what you do. It doesn't matter if you've let the people know through your previous actions if you're going to be good at what you're doing. That doesn't matter. Make sure that you get what you want. They're going to make sure that they get in there who they want, even though the person isn't someone who is qualified. And to me, Ketanji Brown Jackson is not qualified to be in that position, yet we're going to have her for the next 30-some years. We have a new leaked Disney video of a CEO who grovels and vows significant new action on LGBT issues, another issue that I want to just wish, that I wish would just be stamped out. In recent weeks, Disney has been emerging as an increasingly vocal activist for the LGBTQ plus agenda. Disney CEO Bob Chapek has argued that Disney is simply seeking more diversity, and there's that word again, diversity, because of it is good for business. In that light, Chapek apologized to the LGBTQ plus community for not being the ally you needed me to be, which was a quote, and pledged to be a better ally in a new video that journalist Christopher Rufo, who did that article on critical race theory that I talked about at the beginning of the show. Chapek said that he is working with the LGBTQIA+ Advisory Council, and they keep adding more and more letters. It used to be just LGBTQ, then it was LGBTQ, then it was LGBTQ+, then it was LGBTQIA+. Where's it going to end, folks? But they are to discern different suggestions about how to take action to help the LGBTQ+ community. He added that words are not enough, so we are taking some actions now. He said, I want you to understand that your words have made a real impact on me. I understand that we have made mistakes and the pain that those mistakes have caused. And I and the leadership team are determined to use this moment as a catalyst for meaningful and lasting change. In this article from the Western Journal, they asked the question, will you keep watching Disney? I answered that one. And at the time that I answered it, absolutely no people had said yes. 100% of the people said no. But Disney has continued to insist that there is a growing queerness in our culture that now must be catered to in entertainment. Carrie Burke, head of entertainment, said that her son had told her, Generation Z is 30 to 40% queerer than the other generations. Mom, so Disney better get with it. Disney keeps pushing the envelope beyond just verbal support of the LGBTQ plus agenda, as though, as Chapek said they would. The entertainment giant also announced to its employees that they have a new benefits program that will allow employees and their families to access gender reassignment surgeries, oh my God, or hormone usage, the post-millennial reported. Now, from this, we go to Florida. Florida, the governor there, had signed the new bill to stop schools from teaching sex and stuff like that to kindergartners to grade 3. The media ran roughshod over all of that, saying that was the Don't Say Gay bill. The problem with that is that the word gay was nowhere in the bill. Wasn't there. And I'll get to that one in the second hour. But this whole idea that they can say stuff like that and have nobody there to say, no, now wait a minute, you're lying, you are not telling the truth, putting some consequences to the actions that they're throwing out there. It's just insane, folks. And people need to start pushing back. The other area that all these people are talking, the entertainment giant also announced to its employees that they have new benefits program that will allow employees and their families to access gender reassignment surgeries or hormone usage. The other big area is gender identity and expression. So doing all this work to ensure that our employees can express their gender here authentically and proudly at the company. So if you're a guy there and you say you're a guy, does that give you the same rights? If you're a woman there and you say you're a woman, does that give you the same rights? I don't think so. I think what they're going to start doing is pushing this LGBTQ bullcrap on all of us to try to do what critical race theory has not been able to do. And we're going to continue to get worse and worse until we start pushing back. And we have to start pushing back, folks. This is getting insane. We have a man competing against women and winning. And the whole world is saying, oh, this is so awesome. This girl is so great. No. What should be done on this is when he wins a race, his win should be taken away from him. He should be told to go back to going against the men, even though he couldn't win doing that. And the woman who came in second place should be given the first place trophy because she was the best. He wasn't. But that's where the left and all of these people are taking us. This whole idea of Ketanji Brown Jackson saying that she cannot define a woman. That should have been a real stickler right there. That should have stopped the confirmation process right there. But during the celebration of her confirmation, the president praised Jackson for showing poise and composure, patience and restraint, and yes, even joy during the hearings. Biden criticized the hearings for Jackson despite his own record of presiding over Senate hearings smearing Justice Clarence Thomas with accusations of sexual assault in his 1991 confirmation hearings. Thomas then responded by denouncing the hearings as a high-tech lynching for uppity blacks. Those quotes, that quote from Thomas and others on the left, you know, from Thomas, and then the other quotes from people on the left show just where what the left thinks and how they think. To them, it doesn't matter that she couldn't answer the question if she was a female. To me, that is troubling to the worst degree, but apparently the senators who voted her in didn't think so. If a black wants to better themselves on their own or without the left's help, they are considered uppity and have to be put down in any way they can. And looking back at what Biden did to Clarence Thomas and his, at his hearings, we can see that clearly, though now he tries in vain to hide the fact that fact from the public. But there are those of us who remember. There are those of us who remember that the leftists are all hypocrites, and sooner or later, they're going to have to go back on what they said. I will remain as long as you do to bring you the news of the day. We will be right back. As the technology of drones constantly grows, and things get easier and easier to do, the cameras on the drones available are better too. So much so that mapping and surveying is now done with drones. That is the one area that Eye in the Sky Drone Services comes into play. You need your roof scanned out for work to be done up there? Call Eye in the Sky Drone Services. You need land photographed from the air? You need to call Eye in the Sky Drone Services. We can even do weddings from a perspective not seen anywhere but in the movies, all in 4K and full color, unless you wish to do your videos in sepia tone or even black and white. We can even go into the oil field and take photos out there of oil rigs and pipelines too. That is Eye in the Sky Drone Services out of Albuquerque, New Mexico. Email us at eyeinthesky@gmail.com or call us at 505-317-8741. Give us a call because we can do it all, because the sky is the limit. Conservative Nation Media is growing, and what better way to grow than to bring our own Uncle Bing Fisher back with his great show, American by Design. Uncle Bing Fisher brings his engineer's insight and his love of America back to CNM with American by Design, Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central Time on conservativenationmedia.com. So stay with Conservative Nation Media, working to get ourselves back to 7 days a week, where now we have the weekends filled, ending with one of the oldest shows on CNM, with Bing's mellow voice giving you the wisdom that America is craving today. That's American by Design on Conservative Nation Media, where America always wins.
Please don't do anything you will never live to regret.
There's an angry blowback for the downing of Ukrainian passenger jet gathering momentum in Tehran.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show with your host, Robert Garding. This is Kathy Henner's A Daily Roll Call, and we need more voices like Robert who aren't afraid of the wrath of the left, even when the truth is told and it doesn't fit their agenda. Now, with Biden in charge, this is more imperative than ever. From New Mexico in CNN's Freedom Studio comes the second hour of the show. And now, here again is Robert.
Okay, sorry about that. I have been fighting with this my microphone tonight. I know that I must keep it actually active because when I go through my advertisements and things and I don't say anything for a while, the volume on it tends to go down. So I shut it off and I thump it to try and keep the microphone up and going. I have been looking through Newsmax this evening trying to see the things that are being talked about, like with critical race theory, and the things that are going on. One of the things that is going on in Florida is that Stacey Abrams is running for governor against DeSantis, and she actually thinks that she's going to win. But it says the Florida governor, GOP Governor Ron DeSantis, on Friday quipped of an impending cold war between Florida and Georgia should Democrat Stacey Abrams win Georgia's – yeah, well, I guess she's running for Georgia should – Democrat Stacey Abrams win Georgia's gubernatorial election. He said, we've got a little bit going on in Georgia this week with the Masters Golf Tournament, big deal. I just want you to know that we really appreciate our Georgians. If Stacey Abrams is elected governor of Georgia, I just want to be honest, that will be a cold war between Florida and Georgia, he said during a press event in Gulf County. I don't have the former Cuban communist leader Raul Castro to my south and Abrams to my north. That would be a disaster. So I hope you guys take care of that and we'll end up in good shape. He went on to state that Abrams would be a step too far, especially given the current leadership in the country to Florida's south. Abrams, the former governor, Georgia House Minority Leader, is running uncontested in the Democratic primary. She currently trails both her potential Republican opponents in her second bid to become governor, including incumbent Governor Brian Kemp and former Senator David Perdue, according to the Hill Emerson College poll released on Wednesday. Kemp, who beat Abrams in 2018 by just 1.4 percentage points, and that's kind of scary. You think that somebody like her could get that close to winning? Leads Abrams by a 51 to 44% margin, while Perdue leads Abrams with 49 to 44%. Abrams' campaign brushed off the survey, of course they did. When it comes to polls, 7 in 10 Georgia voters opposed the Kemp-Perdue criminal carry bill, and 7 in 10 opposed the Kemp-Perdue denial of Medicaid access to 500,000-plus Georgians. We can't afford polls that will more than likely underestimate the power of Georgia's voters of color or the commentary from pundits who were wrong about Georgia in 2020 and 2021. But I think everybody in the nation was wrong about the election in 2020. But it goes on to say, we can make sure Georgians learn about the record of our eventual opponent whether it's Brian Kemp, David Perdue, or Candace Taylor, said Seth Brigham, an Abrams campaign spokesman. I don't know. This whole thing just drives me freaking insane. Everything that's going on now is saying that there's going to be a red wave in 2022, and maybe 2024. But Pelosi is sitting out there saying, oh, no, that won't happen. We are not going to allow that to happen. Well, how? My question to her is, if the voters vote in other people other than her, how is she going to keep from allowing that to happen? She doesn't have the authority. She doesn't have the, well, authority is a good word for it. She does not have the authority to stop that if the American people vote against them. Now, does she? She seems to think she does. And I'm not exactly sure why they can hold a press conference and say things like that that are patently untrue, but nobody pushes back on them. Maybe it's because of that time that, well, I can't think of a time. The time I was thinking about was when somebody threw a shoe at President, now I can't even think of his name. Oh, my gosh. But it seems like the people in this nation who are actually fighting for this nation don't have the backbone to stand up when people are pushing against them. It's one of the reasons why DeSantis is such a hardcore person for the left right now. The left just totally goes insane when they hear his name, because he doesn't care what they think. He doesn't care what they think about him. He is doing what he was elected to do, and he doesn't care what the left has to say. He doesn't care what the left says about him. He doesn't care. And the reason why he doesn't care is because he knows he's doing what he was elected to do. Another article that I found when it comes to CRT, and this one is disturbing. The headlines in Newsmax says kindergarten students in Maryland will learn about gender identity and expression. Okay. When you're that young, do you need to learn about this stuff? I don't think so. Pre-K students in Maryland will learn about gender identity and expression, including how to recognize and respect that people express themselves in many different ways. Folks, if the parents would do their jobs, schools wouldn't have to do any of this. If the parents would do their jobs and teach the kids like they used to, the schools wouldn't have anything to teach the kids now, except for reading, writing, arithmetic, geometry, history. And history is kind of a bad example because they're screwing that one up all over the place. But it goes on to talk about this. It says, additionally, teachers are not required to inform parents about their child's desire to change genders, according to the Maryland State Department of Education State Health Education Framework. That right there is wrong. Under the gender identity and expression subcategory of family, life, and human sexuality section, the state says pre-K students should also recognize and respect that people express themselves in many different ways. Folks, they're teaching your kindergartners to think about themselves sexually and to think about themselves as something else. Why else would they say, would they put in the clause that teachers are not required to inform parents? Why? Because they know that the parents will hit the roof. I know I would. There was one time in Indiana where the kids were made to go to a rally. They had President Obama of the time speaking to them through a video feed about the things that he wanted to do. Me and my wife found out about this, and we told them that our daughter was not allowed to go to that. The school sent her anyway. I don't remember too much more that happened on that one, because that was a bunch of years ago. But I know that we didn't do anything about it, and we should have. We should have raised hell about it. We should have gone to the school board. We should have done what these parents today are starting to do, going to the school board and telling the school board that, no, they are not going to teach their children about CRT and all of this other stuff. And you see what's happening is the school boards don't know how to handle it. They don't know how to handle a parent coming in there and telling them, no, you are wrong. You cannot do this. I am your boss. This should have happened a long damn time ago, because they're now saying by kindergarten, children should recognize a range of ways people identify and express their gender. Well, of course they should. And it goes on to say, an importance of treating people of all gender equality, identities and expressions with dignity and respect. They are tweaking your kids for the LGBTQ thing, pushing that on them at an age that should not be done. And then they get pissed off when the parents get involved and say, no, this is not going to happen. And then there was another article here where the Texas lieutenant governor wants to ban transgender minors from gender-affirming care. Folks, this whole idea of teaching these kids what it means to be transgender, when they should be thinking of nothing but going out and playing with their kid, with their friends, playing football or playing hide and seek or something. This whole idea that our government is pushing all of this on our kids is insane, and it needs to stop. I know I, for one, am sick and tired of this. My pastor in my church says that anybody who professes to be gay will never get to heaven. And I agree with him. They will not. The Bible and the things that God has said, has put forward as what is right and wrong, never changes. It was wrong in the first place. It's still wrong. And anybody who tells you that being gay means that they can still go to heaven don't know what they're talking about. And parents need to start teaching this to their children, because their children are being led down the path to hell. And as long as we allow this to happen, We are not helping our children at all. Okay, now, they had a thing I was watching, Branko, A.F. Branko's cartoons, and they've got a new one out, and it's got a sign at the bottom that says, apologies to Jack Benny, but it shows Biden in a looks like a gas pump, where you pump gas out. Sorry about that. And it said, and Biden essentially says, I said your money or your life. And he's got the nozzle that pours out gas stuck to the guy's back, and the guy's hands are up, and he says, I'm thinking it over. The things that A.F. Branko comes out with sometimes are just amazing. It's funny. They have a new movie out now called Rigged. Got a lot of things in it that have been, the left has tried to keep hidden, like the emails from Zuckerberg that shows that cash helped pull off an election bait and switch for Biden to win. Zuckerberg's now in trouble. And this whole thing about that election, I still believe it was stolen. I still believe there was no possible way that Biden could have won. And my thinking on this one goes straight from the fact that when you saw a rally before the election, you saw a Trump rally, and there was tens of thousands of people always there. Always there. As far as the eye can see, you could see people just everywhere. And then they'd show a Biden rally where he had maybe 10, 20 people partially spaced out in front of where he'd be speaking. There were more people outside protesting than there were inside. Yet you go to a Trump rally and there's tens of thousands of people there. If people would just look at this, they would realize that Trump didn't lose that election. But nobody's got the backbone enough to say, hey, you guys are wrong. Biden's not president. But it may actually work in our favor. Because if Trump had won and nobody could say that he didn't and he was actually president now, that would be the end of it. He wouldn't be able to run anymore. Now, granted, he is older by the time 2024 comes around. He'll be 80 years old. But what I see between him and Biden is Biden has maybe a tenth of the energy that Trump does. Trump never seems to slow down. So I can see him running again. I can see him winning again, and I can see him taking this country back the way he did. Lower unemployment. One of the reasons why right now the left has this strategic supply of gasoline to give out to help Biden is because Trump refilled it. After Obama, Obama did the same thing. He used that to help with the high gas prices. Biden is doing it now. But after Obama did it, when Trump became president, he refilled that. He put it back to where it should be. That's the only reason why Biden has the ability to take gasoline out of the strategic storage thing, which is supposed to be used for emergencies and for the military. And it will give like 100,000 barrels a day, but only for a short time. And he's never thinking that if he hadn't closed down the Keystone Pipeline, gas prices would be cheaper now. All they're saying now is that we can't just start it up again and have gas prices fall, because they won't, because the pipeline isn't working yet. Well, folks, it wasn't working yet back then either. It was still being built. We are having all kinds of problems here in the United States right now because of the fact that the liberals all over this nation are saying we can't do this because it won't help. And because the media constantly agrees with that, people don't question it. It's like here in New Mexico. We've got this governor who has been a tyrant the whole time she has been in office. And right now we've got several people who are running against her in this coming election. Hopefully one of them will unseat her and take her out of office. We had, this state was locked up, masked down, until about, maybe a little less than a month ago now. She finally lifted the mask mandate. And I actually still see some people running around the stores, like in Walmart and around this apartment complex I live in, wearing masks. Nowhere near as much as they used to. But a lot of people still wear them because she had them so freaking afraid of COVID that they're afraid that if they take the masks off, they'll catch it and die. A few months ago, both me and my wife found out that we had had COVID. We didn't know it. And everybody talks about how when you're older, that it's worse for you. Well, this year, I'm 69 years old. I'm the same age right now as my dad was when he died. His birthday was in July 1st. He died on February 14th. He would have been 70 if he'd have made it to his birthday. I think in June, May or June, I become exactly the same age he was when he died. Earlier this year, or this last year actually, it was I think in about February or March of 2021, both me and my wife caught COVID. We were sick for a few days, ran a fever of 102, I think it was, that my wife had. The next day, she was still running a fever of 101, but since she worked from here at the house, she went back to work. A day later, she was fine. After she got better, I got sick and had the same exact thing. And she went and had a, they had a study here in New Mexico where they were having people give blood so that they could see if the people could take part in a COVID test thing. And they found out then that my wife already had the COVID antibodies, that she had already had COVID, that she was not eligible. And this, to me, was something that just blew me away. Because we didn't think that we had had it, yet both of us got sick exactly the same way, exactly the same length of time, exactly the same kind of symptoms. And then after that, it was over. Well, here in New Mexico, what we had was this governor who said, it didn't matter if you had already had COVID or not, you still had to get vaccinated. They had all kinds of protests all around this state, all around this city, for especially the nurses who were losing their jobs because they would not get vaccinated. She never gave. They never gave. But it's getting to the point now where it's like with when she dropped the mask mandate here in the state, there was only one other state that still had it. And I guess the only thing I can think of is that maybe she just didn't want to be the last state to get rid of the mask mandate. Of course, it's kind of funny that she started, that if she was thinking that way, because she's got us last in every other category. Unemployment. People out of work. People looking for work. People not looking for work. Income. She's got us last in everything. Education. It's a sad thing to behold, folks. We will be right back. We will be back after these few messages from important sponsors. Vietnam was the war where American troops showed valor and bravery on the battlefields, but where the enemy was nothing more than ghosts in the jungle, and they were superstitious too. This gave rise to the Vampire Patrol. Six men who fought the whole war together, spreading death and destruction along with vampire voodoo lore into the ranks of the enemy with cutthroat precision and accuracy. Now, years later, Matt Joseph works as a private investigator in Tucson, Arizona, running his own business, the Matt Joseph Investigations Company. His best friend and former commander of the Vampire Patrol is chief of police of the South Tucson Police Department. The job that gets Matt on this case also brings the Vampire Patrol back from the past and places it smack dab in the middle of the present day, taking him to a small town on the Indian reservation called Lukachukai in northern Arizona. There, a mountain named Roof Butte not only holds mystery, but also a dark cloud of fear that oozes out of it into the evening sky. Matt has been hired to find out what is going on without getting caught up in its death and destruction in the process. Night Owls is first in a new series of mysteries featuring Matt Joseph, Private Eye, and is on sale now at https://amazon.com/dp/15002844491. That's https://www.amazon.com/dp/15002844491. It is also available in both digital and book form. That's Night Owls, Matt Joseph Mystery by Robert P. Garding. Order it today. If you have a show that you are looking to get on the air on a network, CNM is looking for you. Give us a call at 505-317-8741 or email us at conservativenationmedia, all one word, 2017@gmail.com. Send us a short MP3 giving us a sample of what you would sound like. the day you want to be on, and the time you want to air your show, and we will do the rest. CNM is a talk radio network with a conservative bent, and we love America, her constitution, her laws, and we support our boys in blue and our military too. Come join us and get yourself on the air. The days we have available for new shows is Monday through Thursday, where we have no shows, and we can accommodate one show more on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Give us a call and see if we can get your show on the air on CNM, and see what happens then, where America always wins.
Call-in number is 646-478-5284. One of the things that I found, and this one just blew me away too, it was an article from Western Journal, and the headline of it, "Kids Will Be Killed If Teachers Aren't Allowed to Teach About Sex and Gender." Just when I thought that the left couldn't get any more stupid, Pete Buttigieg says this. Kind of makes one wonder how my generation got through school without being killed. We were never taught in school and about sex and gender. We learned it from our parents. Leftists have made plenty of outlandish allegations about the state of Florida's new parental rights in education law. White House Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg's suggestion on Friday may be one of the craziest. Buttigieg appeared on ABC's The View, and co-host Anna Navarro wasted no time addressing the Florida law, which Democrats have incorrectly called the Don't Say Gay Bill. After Navarro went on for a bit about how this law could be offensive to Pete Buttigieg, since he is gay, he responded to her question, quote, "Yeah, he's right. I think every law ought to be judged for the effect it's going to have on real people in real life," unquote. In other words, Buttigieg said he agrees that this law in Florida will kill kids. This is ridiculous on so many levels. First, it is a blatant attempt by Buttigieg to convince Americans that this law is an attack on children. It isn't. In reality, the opposite is true. This law is designed specifically to protect children. According to Fox News, the bill does not prohibit teachers from saying gay. Instead, it stops them from instructing children in kindergarten through third grade about sexual orientation or gender identity of any kind, which is a good thing. There is a strong argument to be made that children who are between 5 and 9 years of age should not be learning about these subjects in any capacity. But if parents maintain their children should learn about sex at such a young age, that is a conversation that should take place directly between parents and their children, don't you think? It should not be controversial to say teachers have no business instructing children under the age of 10 about sex. Second, the suggestion that children will become suicidal if they do not learn about sex at 5 years old is ridiculous. Children are hardly even old enough to dress themselves at that age. They are certainly not old enough to decide if they want to change gender identities. Many children go through a transition period in which they learn more about who they are in the world, and that period does not tend to be tarnished by leftists forcing twisted ideals into their minds. It seems unlikely a child under the age of 10 would bring up sexual orientation or gender identity on his own without first hearing the terms from someone else. But it is possible. Even in that case, such a serious conversation should be reserved for parents to have with their own children. Teachers have no place in it. Finally, the suggestion that Chasten Buttigieg is some sort of expert on respecting and caring for children could not be further from the truth. This is the same man who can be seen indoctrinating children in the documentary Mayor Pete. Ridiculous behavior like this is likely to cause confusion and mental strife for children, and that is exactly why Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed a bill preventing it in schools. And when he did that, the left went apeshit crazy. Buttigieg's argument against this law is completely backward. If anything is going to mentally harm children, it's his husband's woke nonsense, not the bill protecting them from it. The problem comes in here, that the media will report on crap like this, but it will not ask the logical questions about what is being said. That is left up to the people like the Western Journal, who is not allowed to be there when this stupidity is uttered, or people like me, who would ask them if we were allowed there. We are not, because of the plain and simple fact that we would ask the questions and the left would have to answer. And when they answer, we would hold their feet to the fire and not let them get away with their stupid comments about making sure they have consequences, you know, their stupid comments without making sure that they have consequences to their stupidity. Until this kind of thing is confronted, when it is uttered, it will continue to be said. And the things that I have been reading in the papers that I read today is just totally insane. That one with Pete Buttigieg, where he says kids will be killed if teachers aren't allowed to teach about sex and gender. No. And somebody should have pushed back on him on that one. With the things that are going on today, I am completely at a loss as to what the people are thinking. I do know that in this next election, we're going to have a red wave. We'll probably even have it here in New Mexico. But already our governor is working on limiting the damage to her political life with the things that she has done, by pushing the ideals of what is actually going on into the realm of wrong. And the thing that upsets me about that is that so many people get all their news from places like the Albuquerque Journal. Where they are, you know, where they are totally away against what is really true in the way that they report things. This morning's headline about history in the making was a bigger headline in bigger, bolder type than when Trump won the presidency. It was in bigger, bolder type than it was when Trump was exonerated after the trials and they found out that he was not guilty of the things that the left was trying to push. And this last week, what they had here was a special session that the governor tried to push where on Tuesday the New Mexico legislature reconvened upon request of scandal-ridden alleged serial groper Michelle Lujan Grisham, our so-called governor. The special meeting of the legislature came after fierce bipartisan backlash following her veto of $50 million in junior money that would go to each representative's district. At the time, Lujan Grisham said she was unconvinced that the distribution of more than $50 million for projects across the state upholds principles of fiscal responsibility. Now, this comes after she signed a mammoth $8.5 billion budget that's huge for this state that included millions in funding for Green New Deal, anti-gun programs, and taxpayer-funded free college. Also included in the special session was an apparent attempt to buy votes by giving New Mexicans relief payments amid rising gas prices. But she refused to have the legislation pass a tax cut on gasoline. According to the Santa Fe New Mexican, these rebates are payments of either $500 to individual taxpayers or $1,000 to households with joint income tax filers. The outlet reported, payments will be dispersed in June and August. That way, Representative Christine Chandler said, the economic effect on the state will be split between two budget years, 2022, which ends June 30th, and 2023, which begins July 1st. Single taxpayers will receive two payments of $250 each, and couples who file joint returns will get two payments of $500. Taxpayers who file their returns electronically will automatically receive their payments via direct deposit into their bank account. The state will mail checks to others. But many Republicans claim that the bill would violate the state's anti-donation clause. The gas rebate bill ended up not being a gas rebate bill. HB 2 has nothing to do with the gas tax, said Representative Stephanie Lord, Republican of Sandia Park. A rebate means you filed taxes and you get a rebate on personal income. HB 2 had a payment, not a rebate, portion in Section 2 that not only violated the anti-donation clause of the New Mexico Constitution, but it also had a financial cap with a first-come, first-serve limitation. We presented a substitute that would have removed the Constitution violation, but it was denied. During the debate, Democrats claimed senior citizens did not know how to file taxes to attempt to ram it through Representative Alessio Alcon, Democrat of Milan, said, seniors don't know how to do taxes. So seniors are the ones who have been filing taxes more than anybody else in the world, yet we don't know how to do it. Article goes on to say, illegal aliens and foreign nationals will receive money through the bill if they are registered with an individual taxpayer identification number, or an ITIN. The bill will cost taxpayers $700 billion, which is taking more desperately needed money from the state's general fund. The bill passed 50-13 in the House of Representatives and by a 35-1 vote in the Senate, with Senator David Gallegos, Democrat of Eunice, being the one vote against. I don't know. This whole idea, you know, they're talking about a red wave in 2022. We already have Democrats like Michelle Lujan Grisham here in New Mexico doing everything she can to make people vote for her, giving out money that actually she's saying, oh, I'm giving you money. No, she's not. She's actually taking money from us so she can give it back to us. That's where we have to realize here, folks, when the government gives you money, the government has to take it from you first in order for them to be able to give it to you. And a lot of people don't realize this, even though it's been said over and over and over and over and over again by me and Douglas V. Gibbs, who I read the first chapter of his new book, Creator. He has said this. We've had Ted Cruz say it. We've had politicians all over this nation say it. And if people would just listen, they would know it. But they hear this thing where the government's going to give you $500 or $1,000. Oh, wow, stars in your eyes. They're giving me money. Whee! It's insane to think that the people can be that stupid. But they are. It's insane to think that what is going on in this country is a complete reversal of the roles. We have our nation's highest court, the newest member of the highest court, making victims feel like they're the ones who were wrong. And the people who perpetrated the crimes were the ones who were being wronged. That's okay. We have men who cannot win as a man in sports saying he is now a woman and being allowed to compete in women's sports and is now touted as being number one. No, he's not. He's just a fraud. That's all he is. And all the women who came in second to him are the real winners. And he should be made to give up his trophies that he supposedly won and give them to the rightful winners because he should not have been in there in the first place. He should not have been there in the first place. He hasn't even gone through the surgery to make himself a woman. But I have my own say about that one, too. If he goes through the whole gender reassignment surgery thing, gets everything cut off, gets made into a woman, he can live his life as a woman, but he will never be a woman. Take some blood from him after it's all done, said and done. Take some blood from him and get the DNA from him. He is a man. Always will be a man. There is nothing mankind can do to change what God made us. Plain and simple. You're born a man. I don't care what you have surgically done to you, you're still a man. You're born a woman. I don't care what you have surgically done to you, you are still a woman. That'll never change. And the people need to start opening up their eyes and getting rid of this idea that all you have to do is say, oh, today I'm going to be a woman. And it's accepted. Where this whole idea came from of being so ashamed of who you are that you have to change who you are to be proud of who you are is another one of these things that the left has done to this nation, done to this world. It just blows me away that we cannot tell the truth anymore. Because if we tell the truth, we're the bad people. If we tell the truth, we're the ones who are being horrible. And And in this truth-telling, we have to know that what the left is pushing is wrong. I don't think I've heard anybody from the left saying anything that has been right over the last 12 years. Now, I've heard some Democrats actually say something that is right. It doesn't happen often, but it has happened. But leftists do not. Leftists want to destroy this country. Leftists want to get rid of our Constitution. Leftists want to get rid of our rights. And if they succeed at that, shows like this one, shows like Vince's Black by Color Only, will disappear. The memory of Rush Limbaugh will disappear. Sean Hannity will disappear. Mark Levin will disappear, because it won't be allowed. It will not be allowed. That is what we've got coming if we don't put a stop to all of this now. That article I read earlier today about, earlier during my first hour, about CRT and what we can do to get rid of, to get it so that we can get rid of CRT. That one came from Newsmax or Western Journal, one of the two. And it was a good article. I've got it. If anybody wants it, they can email me at conservativenationmedia2017@gmail.com. And ask me for it, and I will send it to you. But we need to start teaching that CRT is not what the left is telling us it is. And we need to start continuing to push against the teachers who are trying to teach our children this insanity. Our children and our future depend on it. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Sarge, for being here. And the phone call that I had that, where they were listening, God bless you all. And I'll see you next week. On Monday, I will start doing my updates again. Talk to you later. God bless you all.
God bless you all. See you next week.